Good evening. Kind of a troubling gospel reading for those of us who like to gather in a public place to pray. For those of us who maybe even park a little closer to the street so that people see our get out of the way and go to church. But you probably wanted to stay on the way here. I understand traffic was particularly bad. Ash Wednesday is such a sacred time as we enter into a season of Lent. Ash Wednesday is a day that's celebrated or acknowledged differently by denomination, but many come to church and receive the form of a cross and ashes on their forehead, reminiscent of Old Testament theology where in mourning and acknowledging our sorrows, we wear sackcloth and ashes. The history of the season of Lent is rich, though, in that it is reminiscent of the 40 days and 40 nights that Christ spent in the wilderness. And while he was tempted by the devil while he was there, we know this to be a time where he was prepared spiritually, emotionally, and otherwise for the ministry which we read about throughout the rest of the gospel. So we all ought to be grateful for that. And often we acknowledge Lent in some sense by giving up something kind of in a reminiscent capacity, something relatively menial compared to what Christ gave up, but something that's supposed to help hearken in our minds and remind us on a regular basis of the sacrifices that Christ made for us. But this year, I have a hard time not recalling last Ash Wednesday when I raced to be at the 7 p.m. service after having spent the better part of the day at the hospital with my family as the surgeons prepared to remove Noah's appendix. Last Ash Wednesday, I was a bit of a wreck. Fortunately, I didn't get in a wreck as I raced out to Papalay, but I was a bit of a wreck, and there's nothing like a child awaiting surgery and hoping that they'll remove the appendix before it bursts to make one a bit self-reflective. And it's nothing like a sick child to remind you of the priorities of life and what's really important. And I completely skipped the noonday service that last year because while, church, God, my career as a pastor are all very important to me. They pale in comparison to those times with my family. Sorry, guys. I would like to share a couple of thoughts about, in the years I've preached on Ash Wednesday, I've run the gamut from don't share what you're going to do, like we read in the gospel. Don't share it. Let it be a witness. Do it in secret. If people notice, you can own up to it, but do it in secret. To tell everybody so that they can help hold you accountable. And I imagine probably the best methodology is somewhere in between. So I'll walk, very Episcopal of me, I'll walk the middle way this year. But I would like to share two different things. One is the discipline that I found most enriching in all of my years of trying different things and giving up different things. And then a little bit about what I hope to do this year, because it may, in some small way, impact you at some point during Lent. So it's like a fair warning or something. So I got to say, out of all the different things I've given up, the year I gave up plastic bags was the most meaningful. As some of you I've confessed this to already, and many of you have faced this conundrum with new state laws about plastic bags, or at least faced the consequences of having to pay for bags in places where they were free before. But this was 7 or 8 years ago, and after probably a good year of driving around with a big stack of cloth bags in our trunk, I knew that I needed something to kind of drive me towards actually implementing the practice I knew to be good. And so one year for Lent, I said I'd give up plastic bags. Now this seems like a simple enough endeavor, especially since you know I already have the cloth bags in the car. But there's something that happens between getting out of the car and the store that you rarely remember the bags until you're heading to the checkout stand. Some of you probably can relate to this. And it left me on more than one occasion contemplating, because I was doing this when I was in Alaska. So it's still winter in Alaska. It's easy to forget on a beautiful sunny day in Hawaii, but it's still a blustery winter during Lent in Alaska. And so if I was with my kids, I was forced to choose between bundle the kids back up to go out and get the cloth bags, knowing that they would remove every article of winter clothing while I was in the checkout lane, and I'd have to put it all back on again at the end. Or trying to load everything into the cart without bags and trying to explain to the cashier that, no, really, I don't need a plastic bag. Which is more challenging than you might imagine. No, I don't need a bag. It's okay. Are you sure? You know, and more than one occasion, I was caught by a parishioner trying to carry about 23 items without a plastic bag because I refused to go back out to the car. Kids were littler then, they weren't as good at carrying things. And this was a discipline that was meaningful to me. It was helpful to instill kind of a creation care aspect for myself, but it was also a discipline that I found impacted me because it gave me a chance to share my faith story. No, you know, like, are you sure you don't want a bag? No, I gave them up for Lent. What's Lent? You know, was sometimes the question we'd get. I also know that it impacted my wife and my deacon in Alaska because they were afraid to go shopping with me for a time. And they were a great support. They'd help me remember the bags. But if they went shopping without me and got a plastic bag, they hid them. Which I only found out later when I found a big stash of plastic. They were scared of what I might say. It was my discipline. It was okay. I said, you can use plastic bags. I just can't. So I guess part of the reason I like having given up plastic bags is because it made me laugh, as it has made you laugh. This year, having spent a bit of time away at a conference and contemplating life a bit and priorities a bit, I still hold to my list of priorities. You know, I've tried to always say that God comes first, my family comes second, and that the church is different from God, comes third, and so on, which is a helpful distinction in many cases, but you can see where even those first three priorities get convoluted and complicated pretty quickly. And I think part of what I'm beginning to realize is that in establishing the priorities, that the number one priority sometimes has to wait, because the other priorities, while they come after, are also important. And I know that sometimes you have to find new ways to honor the other priorities and not let the number one be all-consuming. A couple of years ago, in an attempt to not let technology always draw me out of conversations, I turned the ringer off on my phone. Now, I don't mean just the, you know, I turned the vibrate feature off too, because really, that's, I think, even more distracting than the ringer in some sense. And we've all been in a meeting where we thought we had our phones off, but everybody could hear them. We all know the sound all too well. It's like, whose phone's ringing? Because you can't tell by ringtone at that point. And so I turned the ringer off, and I got myself in a bit of trouble because I didn't really tell people that I did it. What I loved about it was when I was at dinner with people, or in conversation, I was never distracted by my phone. I was never reaching to figure out who was calling, or if it was a text, or a phone call, or an email. But it was sometimes problematic, because when I did pull my phone out, I realized how many calls from one individual or something that I had missed. And so I hope to play around with my use of technology some. I heard someone suggest that one of the disciplines we need to engage in the modern era is a screen Sabbath. And at first I thought, okay, that's ridiculous. There's no way you could go so long without technology, you know, of one kind or another. But I know that I've been blessed by the community here in improving my sense of Sabbath over the last 5 years. As I arrived at St. Nicholas, some of the leaders said, we want you to have a day off, and we want to honor it very well, because we need you to help model what Sabbath keeping looks like. Now, that's a beautiful thing and a wonderful gift, and I didn't know just how serious they were about it, but when I sent out an email once on my day off, I would get two people respond back, say, hey man, isn't it your day off? What day are you taking off if you're working today? And at first I thought, well, that's odd. But they were honoring the commitment they made to me and asking that I honored that commitment to them and to God. And I found such an amazing gift in that time of Sabbath. And I've observed leaders still work to protect that time and sense of Sabbath. And I've extended that to the screen. What I haven't done, I think, where I have fallen down in my sense of priorities and balance in life, is that I find that all too often, when it's not Monday, when it's not the Sabbath, that work and the church can pervade every moment I allow it to. And so instead of sitting and being present, even like a simple example, and what struck me most profoundly was, I don't watch TV with my children. I sit in the same room, in front of the same TV, but I'm often working. And it's different to do that than it is to be present and enjoy that time of family. Now, I'm not just trying to make excuses, but if it takes an extra day or two to get back to you in this season of Lent, this might be why. I'll work to find the balance and hope to achieve it, but I'm making a commitment to myself and to my family to make the time we have together more intimate and not allow my screens to pervade it. I believe this is what we're called to in the season of Lent, is to contemplate our priorities and to prepare ourselves, not unlike Jesus preparing himself in the desert, prepare ourselves for a deeper, more intimate relationship with God, yes, but also with our families and our loved ones. Because it's in cultivating those relationships that we'll find a deeper and deeper relationship with God. And it's in cultivating all of those relationships that we truly become God's disciples.